Right, so today we have the great schus of starting the sugya of Bishul Akum. So we already did Pasakum. Bishul Akum is obviously much more Nogel Lamaisa. Meaning because Pasakum, as we said, for Ashkenazi Jews, it's not that relevant other than the Aseres Yimei Tshuva, because we're makel for Paspalter even when there's Pas Yisrael available. But Bishul Akum is a much greater challenge. So I'm going to do something a little unconventional. Normally when we start a sugya, we'll start with the Mishnah and then go into the Gemara and then discuss. Sif achar sif, we'll go after, you know, go with the topics. I want to start somewhere that's not in that direction, just because to highlight the importance of this particular inyan and how major an inyan it is in this simin. And we're going to come back to it, but just maybe to highlight it at the beginning, because in so much of hashkacha, in professional kashrus, so much relies on this discussion. And that is, for a good hashkacha, the most challenging and often the most problematic area of halacha to deal with is Bishul Akum. And so we're going to come back to this topic, but I think it's worth mentioning at the outset, what qualifies as Bishul Yisrael? Just what does a Jew need to do in order for it not to be Bishul Akum? So we're going to see that for the Beis Yosef, the Jew has to actually put the food on the fire. Anything short of that is not Bishul Yisrael. And therefore, for Svaradim, it's a much more challenging area of halacha. And you have all these fascinating shailas, which Be'ez Hashem will get into. What do you do if you're a Svaradi learning in an Ashkenazi yeshiva? What do you do if you're a Svaradi and you're going out to an Ashkenazi restaurant? Right? So what can you rely on? What can you not rely on? So that, but on the simplest level, without any of the kulas and whatever else is out there, from the simplest level for a Sfaradi, a Jew needs to be the one actually putting the food on the fire. The Ramah allows, even if the fire is just turned on by a Jew, or even chitui, even if the Jew just stokes the coals a little bit, that also works. But then there's a third shita, and this is, you know, not often distinguished enough in people's minds. I mean, everyone knows Sfaradim and Ashkenazim, but there is a third shita, and that is the shita of the Issa V'Heter, that even if you just light a fire from which the fire that's going to cook is lit, that's also good enough. Even more kal. I light a candle, and then that candle is used by the guy to light the stove. That also is enough to take away the problem of Bishul Akum, to make it Bishul Yisrael. Which means that we're even more makil, but according to the Yisrael HaHetzer, by Bishul Akum than we are by Afia, than we are by Pas Akum. And that would mean, why is that so critical? Because what classic appliance or classic way that appliances worked utilizes that method? The pilot light, right? So it used to be, even in a non-industrial setting, a regular stovetop. I remember our first apartment in Queens, the stovetop that we had, you could actually lift off the metal and you could see there is a tube with a pilot light right in the middle. I'm sure in the Heights there's probably plenty of apartments that still have pilot lights. If a Jew lit that pilot light, and the pilot light just stays on forever, you don't see it on top of the stove, it's hidden under the stove, but when you turn on the gas, what's happening is that the gas is being released through the pipes and it's using that pilot light to ignite the burner. So when you turn on the gas stovetop, what you're doing is you're taking the light, the fire that's there, and lighting from that the fire on the burner. So it's exactly the Issa V'Heter's case. It's taking from an already existing fire. Of course, even the Issa V'Heter would say that a Jew had to have lit that pilot light in the first place. Otherwise, he would say, pilot light, so it's okay. No, pilot light is no pilot light okay, not even according to the Issa V'Heter. It's only if a Jew lit the pilot light. If you move into an apartment, you can't just assume a Jew lit it. What you have to do is you blow it out, and then you relight it. And then, if you're Jewish, then you know that a Jew lit the pilot light. But that's the shita of the Ra'ah. If the Ashkacha says, let's say some people go to a restaurant and say, Bishul Yisrael Lishitas B'nei Svarad. So that's good, right? That means that's a place where the Svaradim are Machmir. Sometimes you have Ashkenazi Jews who will call, they're like, what does this mean? It says, Glat Beit Yosef. It says, Bishul Yisrael Lishitas B'nei Svarad. Am I allowed to eat this stuff? So yeah, you're allowed to eat this stuff, meaning this is a Chumrah that the Svaradim have. Now, standard Ashkenazi Pesach is the Ramah, but the Ramah is going to quote, we're going to see, he's going to quote the Yeshit of the Issa V'Heter as a Yesh Omrin. So it does make its way into Shulchan Aruch, but the Shach says not to rely on it. So the rule is, in general, when something's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, even though it's only Yesh Omrin, what's it doing in Shulchan Aruch? It's brought to indicate that you're allowed to rely on it b'shas adchak. So if, let's say you have very often you have like this, you have an elderly person that lives with an aide. A lot of shailas like this, especially during COVID, where family members couldn't be around the elderly people, and their bubble was their aide, the elderly person and their aide, and the aide is not Jewish. Right now, my grandfather has an aide, and you know he's totally mentally there. He's absolutely chayv in mitzvos, right? He's still learning daf yomi every day, and he's still like mentally he hasn't lost at least as far as I can tell over our voice chats, Bliyinar hasn't lost a step. And so he's clearly, you're not going to give me any, dementia, or this and that. That's a whole different situation. But clearly, chayiv in mitzvos. But he can't do everything himself. He has trouble walking. He can't do everything himself. So can the aide be doing the cooking? So that, very often, we actually had a shayla right before Pesach. Someone wanted to know the 99-year-old, I think 99, somewhere between 95 and 99, I don't remember the exact age, grandmother who had COVID last year. The grandson is a doctor, saved the grandmother's life. The grandson is a doctor, lives in my community, he owns one of these urgent care conglomerates. So he was managed to like bring a hospital to her, so that she wouldn't have to go to the hospital, which probably definitely saved her life. Meaning that was one of these think again things. Like, we always thought the safest place for a sick person to be is the hospital, except for 2 months last year, where the most dangerous place for a sick person to be was the hospital. You know, just like you have to just reassess the way all the assumptions that we made. But anyway, so his 99-year-old grandmother, or whatever age, he wanted her to come for Pesach. Problem is, she has an aide, and the aide wouldn't come into the house for Pesach. The aide said that they're not coming to a strange house because the aide wasn't vaccinated, she was not interested in coming for Pesach. So what are they supposed to do? The grandmother needs the aide. They're not able to take care of the grandmother. The aide knows exactly what the grandmother needs or whatever. So they wanted to know. So the other option is grandma's going to be alone for the Seder again. For a second year. So they wanted to know, can they have the aide drive grandma to the grandchildren's house for the Seder? Now grandma's with it, she's sharp, right? It's Amir la'akum, but how big of a shas adchak is this that you can, so she shouldn't have Seder alone? So I thought, that's a good shayla. I said, I'm not going to paskin it. I'll have to ask, Rav Shechter or Rav Willig, but that's a good shayla. So I asked Rav Willig, and I said, Rebbe, there's a 99-year-old woman. He said, no! I said, Rebbe, I didn't like to say the shayla yet. If the aide drives her to the Seder, the aide is going to drive her to, like, he knew exactly where I was going. He was mamish. He said, the aide's going to drive for every Shabbos meal, and the aide's going to, no way, you can't allow it. I have no idea how he knew, like, from that far out. Like, I'm constantly amazed by Rebbe Willig's, ability to see things, but anyway, so he was pretty unequivocal about that. But in a Bishul Akum setting, meaning in a setting where you need the aid to help the elderly person out, so if you know that a Jew turned on the pilot light, then lechara you could rely on the Yisr V'Hetter in such a situation. That would be a Shas Adchak. But that's what you need. You need that kind of Shas Adchak. And this is one of the differences between Shitos and different Kashrus organizations. Some rely on the pilot light heter, or at least did until they, the OU like slowly upgraded their system, because in industrial kashrus there was a tekufa where it was impossible not to rely on the pilot. There's no way you can get a mashkiach there every single day to light the oven. It's just not shayach. So there's no way not to rely on the pilot light heter. Now they have the system where you just log it in from the computer and turn on the fire, so it's much easier. But I don't know that every place is outfitted with that system.
Why is that a shas adchak? Just don't give hashgacha.
Right. I mean, you could just say any place that that has Bishul Akum things that has. So usually it's in combination with something else. Meaning it's always in combination with, because it's in an industrial setting. So you always have a mixture, right? So you always have at least another sniff. But again, we try, when we do sniff im lahakel, we try not to. We try not to collect rejected Cheetos to make some. We try to have one like rock solid one, and then a few others from the Hakel. But you could say that the fact it's not that these places aren't going to be kosher; they'll just have a lesser hashkacha that people will then rely on. You know, it's a complicated cheshbon when it comes to kashrus.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up with a friend. I mean, the other thing everybody's speaking about: what's the svar to say that woman would be able to go to her child?
She's like a cholishim b'sakana. It's a
mirulakum. She's healthy then. Right?
She's healthy, but it's ki'ilu cholishim b'sakana. She's 99 years old. A 99-year-old is not somewhat. You know, it's a shasana. She'd be so depressed that it could be that could be choli being so depressed being alone. So what happened in the end? By the way, I didn't call them back. I said I'm gonna have to ask Rabbi Willy. So I figured I'll ask someone else. You know, I didn't call them back to answer the shaila. So sometimes people think I forgot about them. Sometimes I did. But this one, I didn't forget about it. I just figured, you know, let them ask whoever they ask. So they asked another rabbi, and that rabbi called Rabbi Willick and got the same answer. And the woman came for Yontif. The grandma came for Yontif, and everything was fine. She was okay, you know. So, I mean, they still insist that it was too risky to do that, but whatever. He probably suspected that she wasn't going to be alone, that they weren't going to let that happen, and he was right. She wasn't alone. She enjoyed a wonderful yontif with her children and grandchildren, and now there is another etza. The Chaf Kei used to employ this. Rabbi Reisman said in the Dunkin' Donuts in Brooklyn, which, by the way, I just got a voice note from someone who works in kashrus, told me that Dunkin' Donuts is not allowing new franchises to be kosher anymore because they insist that you serve bacon, and they're not going with the bacon anymore. That's not it's not going to work. Only for those that are franchised, that are grandfathered in, are going to be allowed to do that, but no new kosher Dunkin' Donuts. Somehow the one in the Gurmazian Mall, somehow, because the owner over there is the same owner as the American Dream Mall, is the same owner as an owner somewhere else, so somehow he managed to squeeze it in under the wire. But that they're not, so that's pretty crazy, right? I mean, I'm smelling an opportunity for Krispy Kreme. the market is... when the Chaf Kei used to give Ashkacha and Dunkin' Donuts, what they used to do is they would set up a fire in a way that it can never be fully extinguished. Meaning, Dunkin' Donuts, they're not, like we pointed out, they're not making the donuts there. The donuts are being made somewhere else. But there are things that they're making there. They're making the muffins, and they're making eggs or whatever, some other things that they might be making there. And we could discuss whether those eggs are bishalachim or whatever. But they're making things there. So what they do is they install, imagine you have a dial where as you turn it, it gets higher or lower. So right before it turns off, they install the screw where it just doesn't go any further. So when you turn it all the way off, it's still on a little bit. And that's what the Ashkach installed so that it would never be turned off. It seems a little dangerous to me, I don't know. But a lot of commercial stoves work that way anyway, that the commercial ovens are on and then they turn them off for the night. The next day you come in, it's not really off. It's on a little bit, it's just on a lower setting. They never want it to cool down completely because they need to heat it up again very quickly. So you don't want it to be totally cooled down. So they're set up that way. In commercial settings, even when they do have a pilot light doesn't necessarily mean what we consider a pilot light. Meaning, when we think of a pilot light, we think of these Washington Heights apartments where it's in a tube, and then the gas is going to go through the tube and light the fire somewhere else. That's really lighting from one fire to another. In the pilot light in an industrial setting, very often the pilot light's right there in the middle of the burner, and then the gas comes in and expands that same fire. So Rabelsky Zichrono Livracha was of the opinion that installing that screw to stop it from shutting off is really no better than the pilot light, because he times that you throw in a twig, right? So that's okay. Why is that okay? Because you're contributing to a fire that can actually cook when you throw in a twig. It's a fire that can actually cook. But over here, the tiny flame that you leave in the oven is not a fire that can cook at all. So the Jewish contribution is a flame that can't do anything. And according to the Yisra Vehetra, that's okay, because you could do even in Nermi Ner, you could light from one other candle. But he thought, according to the Ramah and the Shach, that that would not be good enough, that that's less than Ashlachas Kisei, which is a big Kiddush, because Pashtus is that it's there, it's in the stove, and the stove is still lit somewhat. So to say that that's less than Ashlachas Kisei, and that that has a din like a pilot light, is a big Kiddush. The Taina, the way to formulate the Taina is that, think about Afiyah Sakur, right? What do we say by Afiyah? How much of a Jewish involvement? And even if it's off and there's just heat left, it hasn't been down for 24 hours and there's still heat left, even that's good enough. So Bishul Lechara should be the same thing. So Belsky thought, no, but that's when the original heat was a heat that was enough to cook. But over here, it was never enough to cook. All you're lighting is a little tiny, tiny bit that's not enough to cook. Okay, so that's an issue we're going to come back to. We'll discuss in greater detail.
This is way, unrelated to that. I'm just generally wondering that, what do the gedolim or the heads of the kashrut agencies do that other kashrut agencies? Can Rebelsky never eat anything not certified by the OU? Even the OU, when he's a psaki, he's a shefter. Do they not eat any other kashrut agencies?
It depends on the issue. Rebelsky did not eat OU tuna fish. Right? He even though he was opposing for the OU, he and Rav Shapta disagreed about the tuna fish, and Rabbi Ganak was the Kasim HaShlishi HaMechriya Bineim, and Rav Shapta's Pesach carried the day in the end. But Rebelsky did not eat OU tuna fish. So it probably depends on the issue and how major an issue it is. Sometimes there's a Pesach that they'll give because they think, it's a geder or it's for public policy.
That's the thing about the Hashlach's Kisei thing, the Star Bayer.
Right. So I was going to mention yesterday. I mentioned glow plugs and I mentioned light bulbs. So my friend Rabbi Moshe David Leibovitz told me that those are not the same thing. That a glow plug is like 700 degrees. It's like that's real heat. A light bulb. That's what Rabbi Heinemann was making. That a light bulb is which adds almost nothing. But he also told me that the OU, because when I was in the OU office once and they were talking about the light bulbs. And Rabbi Heinemann's light bulbs, and it was like they were making fun of it, like, ah, it's ridiculous, he's Rabbi Heinemann, so he has his shittas, but come on, no one really accepts that. So Rabbi Leibovitz told me that almost every kashrut agency accepts it, except for the OU. So it's all your point of reference, when you're in the OU office, you think that nobody holds this, but apparently a lot of the major kashrut, not, I shouldn't say every, but a lot of the major kashrut agencies do accept that kula, that's the equivalent of Ashlachas Kisei, when you have the light bulb on. Okay, I just wanted to mention that. We're going to come back to that, and we're going to discuss some more details of that, but let's get into the actual sugya now, okay? The Mishnah, Avodah Zarah Lamed Hei Amud Beis. Right, if you've learned Avodah Zarah, Kol did Avodah Zarah last year?
Yeah, so
Avodah Zarah, Dav Lamed to Dav Mem is its own Masechta. Meaning, if you want a good project for Shavuos, a good couple of day limud where you could sink your teeth into it for, Avodah Zarah, Dav Lamed, Dav Mem is very nice. So anyway, so in Lamed Hei Amud Beis, the Mishnah tells, El Dvar Mishal V'chav Masurin, Bein Yisurin Yisrael Na'al, Chalav Shacholav Avik Chavim Bein Yisrael Reil VaPas VaShemen Shalan Rabbi Beizino Hitir HaShemen VeHashlakos. Right, Hashlakos, that Bishlakum is an issue. Food cooked by a non-Jew, even if it's totally kosher, all the ingredients are kosher. Rashi writes on the Mishnah, Kol Davar Shebishlo Avik Chavim VaFilu BeKli Tahor, even in a totally kosher kli. VeKulu Mishum Chasnos, says Rashi, and the whole issue is an issue of Chasnos. Of all of these issues, meaning every item mentioned in the Mishnah, it's all because of chasnus. Then on Daf Lamed Ches, Rashi writes that Bishalakum is aser because the non-Jew might feed you non-kosher food, and that's why Bishalakum is aser. So the Gemara on Lamed Ches, so we can come back to that in a moment. The Gemara on Lamed Ches seems to have machlokas regarding something Rav says. The Gemara says, "I'm Rav Shlomo Bar Yitzchak, I'm a Rav." Apparently two versions of what Rav said. Either he said anything that's edible raw is not subject to Bishlakum, or he said anything that's not olal shulchan malachim is not subject to Bishlakum. So my benayu, ik benayu, davin tan bar, the v'dais of the gemara gives nafkamina. Certain items that meet one criteria and not the other, happens to be all three nafkaminas the gemara suggests are in one direction and not the other. So that's also an interesting point. to think about when you go through the sugya, and whether there's any halacha l'maisa ramifications of that, which maybe we'll come back to as well. But again, the first shita is food which is eaten raw, nech v'kmo shulchai, is not included in bishul akum. And so if a guy cooks an apple for you, that's mutter. And the second shita is that foods that would be served on a king's table, lafis bo sapas, is subject to bishul akum. Anything short of that is not. So of course we're going to have to define the gedarim of that, and we're also going to have to define, are these two gedarim, are these two principles or three? Is it nechuk kmo shulchai, alal shulchan melachim, and lavis bo sapas? Or is lavis bo sapas just mentioned derech agav? It's like a throw on to the end of the sentence, but it doesn't really have to be something that's eaten with bread. Meaning, do you eat rice with bread? You wouldn't eat rice with bread, right? You lavis bo sapas is something that you would eat together with bread. Right, a starch doesn't get eaten with a starch, right? So lavis bo sapas would have to mean something else.
Could be Rebbe's going to get to this, but both of those were brought in the name of Rav, and I think we ultimately hold of both of those.
Correct, right? So it's a stira in Rav, right? Meaning it's a two deus within what Rav held, and yet in Shulchan Aruch we paskin like the Rav Rishonim, the Rambam, the Rashi, and the Rash, who say that both of them are true.
Yeah. There's that Rashi somewhere who said that when it's you don't say Eva Eva when you.
Yeah, Ksubastaf Nun Zayin. The Rashi tells us that whenever you have a machlokas between two people about something, so we can say, but when it's a machlokas between two people about what somebody else said, then you don't say, because if one person says, oh yeah, Reb Meir said Aser, and the other one says, no, Reb Meir said Mutter, well, he didn't say both, so then we don't apply. Over here, that probably doesn't apply, because over here, the two are compatible. You know how I know they're compatible? We pass them like both of them. Meaning it could be that he said both of these things on different occasions. But they're not, they're not a stira to each other. So they're just reporting different things that were said. But that's a chash v'rashi. That's important. That's why whenever the Gemara has a possibility of coming up with a yishuv to, we just had a daf recently. The Gemara said, hadidei hadarabe. Right, one is Rabbi Yochanan's own shita, one is he's quoting from Rabbi Yishmael, because the Gemara had a steer in Rabbi Yochanan at the beginning of Yuma. So why didn't the Gemara just say that Tosas has kasha? Why didn't the Gemara just say that they're both Rabbi Yochanan, but it's two different people quoting Rabbi Yochanan? The Gemara quotes two different people that are quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Why would you say Hadidei Hadar Rabbi when you could just say it's two different people quoting him? So the Pashav answer is, because you don't want to say that. Meaning, if you're going to say it's two different people quoting him, you're saying that somebody's wrong, that there's no Divrei Elokim Chaim on one side of that that discussion, and we never like to say that.
Question? Yeah, how come Rashi Svara for, maybe the goy will have non-kosher food, he'll serve you non-kosher food, why doesn't that apply to Afia as well?
Oh, okay, good. So we're going to come to those two reasons right now. Pashut reason why it doesn't apply to Afia is because the assumption is bread. Who would put lard in bread unless you're Rabbi Reisman's father on the ship over to America? Right? I mean, that was the assumption, that they wouldn't stick, they didn't stick any non-kosher things. But anyway, so in Shulchan Aruch it's about we pass them like both. So food cooked by a non-Jew is usher only if it's not eaten raw and it would be served on a king's table. So from the simple reading of the Gemara, it sounds like it also has to be something that's eaten together with bread, like different dips and spreads and meats and things like that. But food that's not eaten together with bread, like rice, for example, would not be usur. But then the Shulchan Aruch says that not only foods that are lafis bo sapas, he also says leparperes. Leparperes is usur. So that gives the counter indication. In Orach HaShulchan, in Sif Zayin over here, he says, v'nirish shadaitam kenhu, d'zeh sh'omru chazal lafis bo sapas, lav davka. Lav davka hu. Bo'orcha de milsa ka'amar. D'davr she'enu chashu. Ve'in ma'lin al sulcha malachim. Lav is bo'a sapas. Aval le'ikr talui b'davr shal chashivu. Sol al sulcha malachim. Av we should have been asked from lo'am apas. That's really about chashivu. So lav is bo'a sapas is not really a qualification. We'll come back to that. But Shulchan Aruch is telling us that any standalone food is aser if it would be served on a king's table. So now let's discuss the reasons. Maybe, as far as today is concerned, we'll only get to the reasons, and then I guess on Sunday we'll get into Olo Shulchan Malachim and Nechol Kamo Shulchai and the Gedarim and the many, many, many ramifications of that. But let's discuss the reasons for right now. So again, fundamental difference in the makar of the Isra of Afiyas Akum and Bishul Akum. The Rashi, as we said, says that on the Mishnah, that Bishul Akum is also Mishum Chasnus by incorporating it with everything else. Kulu, all of the items in the Mishnah are Mishum Chasnus. But then on Daf Lamed Ches, Rashi writes, Midrabanan, Shelo Yehi Yisrael Rogil Etzlo, B'machal B'mishnah, V'yachilenu Davar Tamei. That why do we want to avoid socializing with the Nachri? Because ultimately, when you continue to have social dinners together with the Nachri, you'll eat a Davar Tamei. He'll feed you a Davar Tamei. So that's how Rashi writes on the very top of Daf Lamed Ches, Amid Aleph. So Tosfos already notes the problem in Rashi. Tosfos Chesam and Avdim Ramaskel Ella, and he says that that it's more mistaver that the reason is Chasnus. Yeah, I'm going to go with Rashi and the Mishnah. Tosfos has that luxury to say, you know, one Rashi, the other Rashi. Okay, I'll reject this one. I'll take that one. We don't have that luxury. I mean, we have to make Rashi make sense, right? So what does Rashi hold? Why did Rashi switch from one place to the other? So the Achronim work on this issue, and they suggest a number of different possibilities. First, it's important to realize the context of Rashi and Daf Lamed Ches to appreciate these possibilities. What was going on at the bottom of Daf Lamed Zayin and Beis before we got to this line on Lamed Ches and Aleph at the top? But the Gemara was suggesting that the source for Bishul Akum is from a pasuk in the Torah. The Gemara was suggesting that it might be a din d'oraisa of Bishul Akum, because Moshe Rabbeinu tells Sichon Melech Hezbon that Ochel Bekesef Tashbireni V'achalti Yumayim Bekesef Titeni V'shasisi. So Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, I'll be able to buy water and food from you and eat and drink the food and the water that I get from you. So the Gemara says, oh, you see that he's going to be able to eat that food that they're being provided. Why is he allowed to eat it? Because it's dum yudamayim. That just like mayim is not nishtan al yidei ha'or, that when you cook it, nothing really changes about it. So too, only those foods that are not nishtan al yidei ha'or, that you're allowed to get from a non-Jew. Otherwise, it would be a violation of Bishul Akum. And that's the source for Bishul Akum. So the Gemara says, come on, midi orksiv? It's not or light, it's or, right? Fire. Midi orksiv? Does it say or? It doesn't say fire. So rather, midi rabbanon ukras smachta bi'alma. The Gemara says, you're right, Bishul Akum is the din rabbanon, pasuk soli in asmachta. But that's the context. So comes along the Bach in the last sentence, in Kufi Beis, and he says that the real reason is chasus. In the Gemara, Rashi's trying to explain the asmachta from the pasuk, which helps define the geder ha'isr, and that's shamiyach lenu davetamei, because the pasuk is comparing food to water, which doesn't change by the fire, and it's about being fed by a nachri, where the concern was a davetamei, right? So if there's a difference between the motivation of the isr and the geder ha'isr. The motivation of the isr is chasnus. But the way they were magdir it is only those circumstances where there's a chashash of yachilen davar tamei. Because whenever you have an asmachta, the Bach is assuming, whenever you have an asmachta, there's a thought that people will interpret that as the source. So if people are going to interpret that as the source, it's going to be a misinterpretation if it follows some different geder than what the pasuk actually says. So if the pasuk is teaching me a geder that would imply that it's about kashrus and not chasnus, so then that must be the geder isur, even if it's not the motivation of the isur.
Why does the source imply more kashrus than kashrus?
Because with this way of thinking, it's that if you're going to supply food, it's I'm only allowed to buy certain things from you based on what's kosher and what's not.
Because I might marry you.
No, because that would be a din d'rabbanan. It doesn't sound like Moshe Rabbeinu was instituting a din d'rabbanan.
Shema, I'll marry them. Shema, I'll eat treif. Why is it?
No, I'm not going to buy things from you that I don't know aren't treif. That's because I have to be choshesh that it's in this d'oraisa. Shema, I'll marry is what I'll come to do next, but this is the food you're giving me. I don't know about the food itself. So that's the Mahalik of the Bach. The Orcha Shulchan suggests that Rashi was bothered why we're more makel on pas than we are on bishul. And he concluded that Pas only has one reason and Bishul has two. But there's no concern of Davar Tamei by Pas, because, like we said before, Kol Ma She'yesh Bo Nira Le'inayim. Pas, if you see like little things on the bread, you know, you'll say, what is that? Why does bread have little things on it? You know, oh, that's this kind of seed, that kind of seed, someone will have to tell you. But bread is supposed to be bread. It's supposed to be flour and water, and, you know, there's not supposed to be much there. In the Sefer Mekor Chaim, which the Oel Yaakov over here quotes, he explains that Rashi is really choshesh for both reasons. And if a situation comes up where one reason doesn't apply, but the other one does, then the food is still asir. It's likely that originally Chazal asked it because of the Achilenu David Tameh, because Bishalakum, if you assume, like we discussed at the beginning of last Simon, if Bishalakum predates Pasakum, which it sounds that way from the Gemara, because the Gemara works with the assumption that it might be Da'oraisa, which means it must be really early Derabanan, it must be that the motivating factor in Asring Bishalakum didn't apply to Pasakum. So they asked for Bishalakum because of Kashrus. That doesn't apply to Pasakum. Then in a later generation, when they asked for a whole host of things, Mishum Chasnus, oh, Bishal also should be also Mishum Chasnus, meaning it fits into that category also. So when they asked for Chalavakum and Pasakum and Sheminakum, because of Chasnus, so Bishal's also included in Chasnus, since it would have been enough reason to make a Xeris Bishalakum for that reason alone. So that's why Rashi on the Mishnah, where it's listing everything, says Kulu Mishum Chasnus. They're all Mishum Chasnus. They're all included in that. So if there's a Mashkiach watching the non-Jew cook, and there's no concern that he might add non-kosher food, the food would still be awesome because of Chasnus, even though the reason of Shemiyach Lenu Dabar Tameh doesn't apply. And that's what we do in Kashrus, right? In the Kashrus industry, where there's always a Mashkiach, obviously. The concern is still one of Bishalakum. The Taz in Sifkat Nalav seems to assume the main reason for the Gzer is because of Chasnus also. What if you're only worried about Kashrus? Meaning, let's say it's a non-religious Jew. So you're not worried about Chasnus, you're worried about, you have Mincha soon? Okay. 2:30 is Mincha? Okay, I don't want to, alright, we'll pick up from there. I didn't get as far as I want. Okay, Baz Hashem, on Sunday. Ol Chazol Namoed. We'll pick up from there. Yet another way that I'm not like that was this way.